Okay, so we are holding about the middle, a little bit above the middle of Coachella Monalis, the landing in Piadotti. Okay, we're in the middle of figuring out, we started yesterday by quoting the Braissa. How do we know the actual order of people, in what order people inherit from somebody? The actual order of the halacha is first a son, if he has sons, no sons and no descendants of sons and a daughter, no daughters or descendants of daughters, then the father of the mess, no father, then the brothers of the mess.
Son, daughter.
Son, daughter, father, brothers, and then if there's no other brothers, then you go back, and the father himself is no longer alive, then you go back up one generation, and you keep that called mishmush,
right.
And you keep on going like that.
And the daughter, remind me, I asked you that yesterday, but the daughter is immediately after the
after the son, yes.
On
so
the
no
basis
sons and daughter on the basis of the prophet says over there that the whole thing. But like Prophet came and said that what do we do? Our father didn't have any sons. Don't we get an inheritance? So Moshe asks Hashem, and Hashem tells him, yeah.
But how do we know the daughter comes up to the brother, the son?
That's what the pasuk says. If he doesn't have a son, if he doesn't have a son, then you hand over the inheritance to his daughter. So we know that. But what we were trying to figure out is this. The pasuk mentions the son. The pasuk mentions the daughter. The pasuk mentions the brothers, and the pasuk also mentions the uncle, the father's brothers. It doesn't actually say explicitly anything about the father. So we started saying yesterday that according to the Braissa that we were quoting, we learned that the father, B'chalal, is in the line of succession from the word She'eroi. She'eroi means his relative, and we darshaned it to mean his father.
Right.
So we were working out, figuring out how we know the exact order. First of all, how do we know where the father is slotted in over there, among the others, again, since after all the pasuk She'eroi is at the end over there, rather than in the middle. And second of all, how do we know the respective order among the other ones as well? If the pasuk is telling us the closest relative comes first, who is considered closer? The son, because he can substitute for his father in Yiyur, then it's De'achoza. Or the brother, because he can substitute for his brother when it comes to Yivum. So that we were discussing all of that. So we were discussing all of that yesterday. So that's where we're holding.
And can't you infer that from the fact that Torah mentions that not the father per se, but Shero, that he should come last?
That's the question, but we know it's not like that. So that's
we know it's
trying.
Not like that.
We know it's not like that.
Because there's more schus in...
Well, so we're gonna discuss it, but that's we're in the middle of discussing that. How do we know where the father comes in that? We know fine.
Right.
We know the father comes after the son, after the daughter, on the basis of what we said. We said yesterday that they had the son has an advantage as far as Yiyur,
right.
De'achoza, and a daughter is also like a son as far as Yibum. But
before the brother, that's
but before the brother, well, that's what we ask.
That's
we,
a different
that, yeah. So, yeah.
And that's
so,
not
okay.
Sure.
So, well, that no. So the last question is. So no. Yesterday we figured out. Thank you. We did figure out that the first thing we said was that the father comes before the brothers. Why is the that's why when the pasuk says the pasuk says she'eri ze'ha'av and it says akarev karev kodim, so we said that that means that the father comes before the brothers because the father is a closer relative than the brothers. Of
the
mess.
Brother's not called She'ero?
She'ero, we said, means the father on the basis of the She'ero Vichahi, we said yesterday, Kim L'She'ero Akarev Elov L'Imor L'Ov. We're going to revisit that again today and see how we know.
It doesn't also include the brother. That's
because
what I'm saying.
We know that She'ero means, She'ero is a general term for a relative, and we're going to talk about soon that it may mean a wife instead, but for purposes of the Jerusha that we're talking about over here, according to this Tana, we're saying She'ero specifically means the father.
This time.
So therefore, so
we're going to learn why that means father.
We're going to know not so much why it's father that we talked about yesterday, because
yes.
We said she'er avichadi, because when the pasuk says you're not allowed to marry your aunt because she'er avichadi, she's your father's relative. Now when you get down to it, the pasuk didn't need to mention that all the relatives over there are
exactly.
Also because they're relatives. There must be for a drasha to teach us that the word she'er means a father.
Oh, okay.
But what
yeah.
We don't know,
what
is,
we don't know is why it's
out of
order. What we don't know is A, why it's out of order, which the Gemara is going to discuss
something.
Soon, and B, okay, no, how we know that it's ahead of the brother that we said, because after all, the Hakarev Karev Kodim, the closer one comes first. And
that only excludes the son and the daughter. How do we know the brother comes before, after the father?
Because what we're saying is that the father is considered a closer relative just in the practical sense. This person who passed away is his son. Brokala Davur, the son is Yerecha, he's his descendant. Besides which also, we talked about yesterday, remember we said there's a machlokus among the Rishonim Bechlal, what's the mechanism by which the brother inherits anyway? Is it direct or is it through the father? If it's through the father, then as the Gemara is going to tell us now, in the case of the uncles, obviously they can't come ahead of the father. That's the question. If you say that it's direct, then fine. You need another way of saying it. If you say it's indirect anyway, then obviously it goes through the father first anyhow. Right. But anyway, so now we're up to the question that, okay. So again, we're in the middle of Kukes Amar Aleph, the line begins Ki Adadi. Why don't you say that, okay, the word She'erei means the father. Fine, we established that. Let's say it means Malamat Sha'av Kodim La'achei Ha'av. All that means is that the father comes before the uncles. Yochol Yaktim La'achim, then you would think that maybe the father comes ahead of the brothers. Thank you. Tamad Lom HaKarov, Karov Kodim, therefore the Pasuk says HaKarov, which means the closer one comes first, which means, in other words, if we understand the Jerusha that way, we'll say, fine, the father comes ahead of the uncles, but he doesn't come ahead of the brothers. What makes us say that the father comes ahead of the brothers?
Well, the brothers ahead of the father.
Well, right. So
it could be seen both ways.
Well, yeah, but in other words, the fact of the matter is, the halacha in the end is that the father is ahead of the brother. But how do we know that it's so? Maybe you should say the pasuk is only telling us that the pasuk is only telling us that the father comes ahead, has to come ahead of somebody, namely the uncles, but not necessarily ahead of the brothers. The answer is achei ha'av lo tzricha kra, because when it comes to the uncles, you don't need a pasuk to tell us that the father comes ahead of them. Because because after all, who are the uncles? What makes them heirs in the first place? Mikoyach av. They only come through the father. When it comes to brothers of the mess, we talked about as in a matter of mishmosh or as a matter of direct. There's no question that uncles, how are they in the line of succession? Only because they go through his father. Okay, if you say mishmosh, you would have to say good.
Unless they have a direct relationship from the mother.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. No, because we said mishpachas eim. We said, no, it doesn't good. The mother is out of the picture. No. We said the mother is out of the picture. Okay, only if she herself is a close relative of
grandfather.
Yeah, right. But in other words, again, if we say that brothers themselves inherit directly from the mess, then fine. What it would be is to get to an uncle, you need two stages. You have the father of the mess has to yashin him, but because the father is dead, it goes to his brother. If you say by brothers themselves it's mishmush, then you have a three-step process. It has to go to his father, but his father is dead, so it has to go up to his father. His father is also dead, therefore it goes down to the uncle.
Either way, it's
a machlok, as we said, but the point is, either way, it definitely has to go through the father. The father is definitely a node in that tree, right, in order to get to the uncle. So therefore, you don't even need a pasuk to tell us the father goes ahead of the uncle,
right,
because they only come from his koyach. Koy av, koyav se achay av. So what are you thinking? What's the logic to say that if the father himself is still alive, that the uncle should inherit? You don't need a pasuk to tell us otherwise. If the pasuk therefore was telling us the father is coming ahead of somebody, and again we know that because he says part of koydim, so it must be the brother. It must be the brother, because all the other ones we said already. The son is even, that's what it is. The son is even closer because he can substitute for his father as far as yud and as far as de'ah chodah. The brother of the mess we said also has a certain kurva, but not compared to the son. The daughter is the same as the son, because even though she doesn't have to yield and to stay at Hosea, she's on the same level as far as Yibum, because if the mess had a son or daughter, then his wife is Pasuk from Yibum. So therefore we can't say the father, therefore we said yesterday, the father doesn't go ahead of either of those. If the Pasuk is telling us the father goes ahead of somebody, it can't be the uncle. It has to be the brother, because it can't be the uncle, so you don't need a Pasuk to tell us that.
And it can't be the son, it cannot be the daughter.
So it can't, exactly. So therefore that's all you're left with, is it has to be ahead of, they have to be ahead of the brothers. Okay.
And when you have three brothers, who comes first?
So then all of them would inherit it equally, except I mean the Bechor would get it. No, actually I'm not sure if the Bechor gets a double portion in that case, but yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, if he died childless, his wife is going to be Yivam anyway. If one of them is Yavam, his wife, we learned way back in Yivamis, that brother is going to inherit his property. Only if none of them do Yivam and they do Chalitza instead, then you're going to have to divide it among the brothers.
How would we have the concept of Mishmosh?
Yeah.
Okay, now, how does the Tanoim that hold Mishmosh, how do they deal with this, or do they did not
do. No. So everybody agrees there is a concept of mishmush. There's no question. The Mishnah is going to tell us later in the Perek. There is a concept of mishmush. So mishmush means that you keep on looking backward. You keep on looking backward until you find an appropriate heir, and then you go down. You descend. You go up the tree as far as necessary, and then you start going down. So in other words, again, a guy has no children. You look at his father. His father's dead. You look at his. You look at his brother. No, the father didn't have any other children. You go back one generation, you look at the grandfather. Did he have any sons? No sons, did he have daughters? Nothing. You keep on going back generation after generation. That's mishmush until you find somebody, one of the ancestors who had more than one child, and then you start descending down that tree until you find
them. How do we deal with the fact that the word shera tells us that the father comes before the brother if you hold a mishmush?
Because even if you hold a mishmush, all it means is if the father is alive, there's no question he comes ahead of the brother. Everybody agrees with that.
Mishmush, in other words, if us,
only if the father is no longer alive. Yeah, only if the father is no longer alive and the brothers are inheriting, then the question becomes, are they inheriting directly, or are they, effectively, the father is the heir, being in the kever, it's called Yodosh Bekever, we'll talk about that concept later in the parak, and then, because he's dead and can't yauchen it himself, then therefore it goes down to his son.
Okay, now you said before the word share is significant because
it means the father.
It doesn't mean the father.
Yes.
Because what's the brother?
Because when the pasuk says the word she'er avichahi, it's in connection with the father.
He's also
talking about his parents in this week's parasha. So we know the word she'er. According to this Tana, we know the word she'er means
father. Yes. But that doesn't mean that she'er precedes the brother.
No, but since we said she'er yakorev elov, what we learn is the she'er, who is the closer than somebody else, and he comes first. Now, since we don't need the pasuk to tell us that the father is considered a closer relative and goes ahead of the uncles, because that's common sense, because they only come from his kayak, right?
No, because
you
would know that.
Yes.
You could say the father, as you said before, generated
that.
Yeah, there is, it's fine, there is that, but still, you could argue, on the other hand, brothers have a certain advantage because they do yibum when the father doesn't, so you could argue that, you could have argued, you need the pasuk therefore to tell us that not.
Okay. The father comes before the brothers.
That the father comes before the brothers, but not before the uncles, yeah. Okay. The question is, v'hakroi lav hachiksiv. Okay, but you have to ask, ultimately, hello, the pasuk that mentions she'eroi is not, we're doing the pasukim out of order, the pasuk that mentions she'eroi is the last pasuk in that section. So how are you putting the father ahead of the brothers and the uncles, which is two pasukim
really, the first one?
Yeah, it should be the pasuk should list it in that order then. It should say son, daughter, then she'eroi, then brothers, then uncles. Instead of son, daughter, brother, uncle,
brother,
and then she'er, which we dash into mean the father. Because the pasuk says, "V'im ein achim la'avi b'gaim." The pasuk says, "Only if the father has no brothers, then you give it to she'er." So it sounds like she'er comes last. The answer is k'roi shalai k'sidron k'sivi. Okay, the pesukim are written out of order. What do you mean the pesukim? Not the pesukim are written out of order. Obviously, we read them in the Torah the way they are. But in other words, given that we realize based on the what we said before, Korav Kodem, we have to interpret the Psukim that the Torah is telling us the Pasuk mentioning She'eroi out of order. In fact, he comes before some of the other ones. Now, you asked me yesterday, and of course, there's the famous question, why would the Torah do that? Why would it write him out of order? So the Rama says something briefly about this, and the Malbim and the Ksav HaKabbalah and the Pasuk develop it further, that basically what it is the Torah is, the Torah is telling us at the end, after mentioning the sequence of people, it gives us a general rule. You should know the general rule over here is Hakarev Koidim, that the closer one comes first, and that the father and the brothers and the uncles are coming Mikoyach. Why are they Bechlal and line of succession? Because they are. Because they come through she'eroi, because there's she'eroi involved over here. That would be more important to the opinion of the brothers themselves only inherit
because
of Mishmash. No, because it's a general summary. We had, if you have a son, then it goes to the son. No son, it goes to the daughter. None of those goes to the brother. None of those goes to the uncle. Then the Torah summarizes and says, why should it go to the brother or why should it go to the uncle? Because they are related through she'eroi. Because they're related through the father.
Yeah, and that's a contradiction.
No, but that's not. In other words, so therefore, that would be. So that's why the pasuk is putting it at the end, because it's kind of summarizing.
If they're related to the sharer, then the sharer should come
No, but it's fine. So it's putting it at the end in order to summarize. You should understand why are they b'chlal in the line of succession? L'chora, it should only be children are in the line of succession because they come through she'er. So first it mentions them, and then it mentions the basis. Why are they on the basis of she'er?
Yeah. So what you're saying, the way you would originally think is each person as his name is coming one after the other. But it doesn't happen that way. We name some people and then share it in the end and
it comes to give us a summary. Yes, it comes to give us a summary to tell us that anybody who's not a descendant, why are they inheriting? Because they have a relationship through Sheira, through the father.
That could be said. It could have been said at the beginning.
It could have been said at the beginning. Look, I mean, the Torah could have also said the father. The Torah could have also said the father explicitly. The reason why it didn't, that Ramban says one reason is because, like we said yesterday, it's poronos. It's a nachlam of a helas. It's like an unnatural thing that a father should be inheriting from his son. So therefore, the Torah didn't want to mention it specifically.
Don't say things because it might happen.
By the way, the Rashbam points out, I mean,
the reason why it comes last.
Yeah, but maybe. Yeah. Not so much why it comes last, but more why the Torah only doesn't even mention it.
The Ramban
says that. Okay. The Rashbam says more generally, I mean, you could say, look, if we're anyway going out of order, why does the Pasuk have to give us this whole rigmarole anyway? The Pasuk should just say, you give it to the closest relatives, and you'll figure out yourself what the closest is. The Rashbam says the reason is because actually we do darshan various things from these psukim. We have to have the pasuk bein ein loy. We have to have the pasuk v'habartem es nachlos l'bitoy. So these psukim are necessary for other drushas anyway. Aside from the fact that, like we were discussing before, like we were discussing yesterday and today, we wouldn't necessarily know how to arrange them in order of closer to further if it weren't for the psukim telling us.
Let me ask you a question. When we know to begin with that there has to be an order, the pasuk should have said, "I currently not craving."
That's the point that Rashbam is saying. The pasuk could have just said that goes according to craving, but then we wouldn't have those psukim available for other drushas. So therefore, the psukim needed to tell us that for other drushas. So what we end up saying is most of the psukim are in order. Only the pasuk, the she'era, is out of order for the reason that we were saying, because it's just kind of a summary. It's giving the basis why the brothers or why the uncles should be in the line of succession anyway. Okay, so far all that's according to one Tana. Now we're going to start another discussion, another way that we learn of the order. The high Tana Maisi Lamehacha. The following Tana learns this, that the father comes ahead of the brothers from a different way. The Tanya, as Zu Dora Shavishmal B'Rabiyansi, when the Pasuk says, Ish Ki Yomu Subain Ein Loiv, the Pasuk starts off by saying a person dies and he has no son. And the pasuk says that v'havartem, you should hand over, you should pass over his nachla to his daughter. So what does the word v'havartem mean? Why is it calling it passing over? So okay, Rashi on the pasuk mentions because it means that now it's going to be eventually transferred out to another shevet because she'll very likely marry a man from another shevet and it'll pass to another shevet. The Gemara is going to discuss that later in our parak along with a couple of other reasons why it says v'havartem. Here, according to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, the reason why it uses the word v'havartem is because it implies you're passing over. You're passing over somebody who by rights should have been first and instead giving it to the daughter. Now, what does that mean? It means when there's a daughter, then you pass over the father, even though you would have thought maybe the father should be getting the first, should be getting first, or not first, but second, rather. If there's no son, then the father should be the next one to get it. Instead, you pass him over, and you give it to the daughter. First, this discusses a little bit how exactly we learn it. One of them is that the pasuk didn't have to use the word v'havartem, it could have said unasatem. Like it does by the other relatives, it's a or nesatim, it's nachalot elochiv, lachayov, or whatever. It could use the same expression, nesatim. But havartim means you're passing over somebody who you would think should have been first. So when there's a daughter,
being
the father. When there's a daughter, you pass over the father and give it to her. The iatim aver nachlam and avim kaim achim. However, you don't pass over the father to give it to the brothers. Which means, in other words, so Tosfos says, because after all, you only have one havartim. So therefore, we can only apply v'havartem. We can only pass over the father one time, not two. So therefore the father is third in the list.
Right.
So you have a son, then daughter, then father, which is exactly how it is. So that tells us that the father is third in the list and not fourth after the brothers. So the first time I learned it, and when we worked out exactly how the Father is, how exactly the Father is and isn't Korov, as the case may be, and how each one is ahead of the other, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying more straightforwardly, the Father is third because you only have one V'havartim. So yeah. Question is, why? Maybe what the pasuk means is maybe the v'havarta refers to the brothers. In other words, like this, if it hadn't been for the word v'havarta instead of the father, if it hadn't been for the word v'havarta, you would have said that the order is son, then brothers, then daughter. Instead, you're putting the daughter ahead of the brothers, maybe, but the brothers are still ahead of the father. But you don't pass over the father even when there's a daughter. In other words, so still, how do you know who says the pasuk b'chalal is talking about the father, or maybe talking about the brother? Maybe indeed the father does come ahead of the daughter.
It says Rashi and Yachi, doesn't it?
No, that's v'havartim. It says you should pass over. But right, no, there is only one v'havartim. But the point still is, how do we know? You're saying that what it means is you would think the father should have been first ahead of the daughter, and the pasuk tells us v'havartim that no, you switch them around. Maybe what it is we would have thought that the brothers are ahead of the daughter. The Havarta tells them to switch them around, but the father should still be ahead of the daughter. Maybe still the order should be son, then father, then daughter, then brothers.
So
how do you know that?
You're not applying Havarta to the father, you would
have applied to the brothers. Exactly. Right. The answer is, in Kein L'Nichtiv Rachmanah V'Havartim. If that were the case, the Pasuk wouldn't have had to write the word V'Havartim, the Pasuk wouldn't have had to write the word V'Havartim at all. Because the pasuk says that if he doesn't have a daughter, then you give it to it, then you give it to the father. Now, not to the then
no.
If he doesn't have a daughter, then you give it to his brothers. Right, but in other words, so we automatically know, right, the Rashbam writes over here, La'aviv, but that seems to be a printer's mistake, it must be La'aviv. Anyway, the point is, we know from that pasuk, obviously the brothers go after the daughter. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi has no reason to say the psukim are out of order. He's going to explain that the word she'era refers to a wife, which is a different thing, that's a different issue. So therefore, if according to him the psukim are in order, and there's no reason to say any of them are out of order, then of course we know already the daughter is ahead of the brothers anyway. You don't need a pasuk to tell us that. Therefore, the only one the pasuk can be telling us that she goes ahead of must be the father, the one who's not mentioned in the pasuk.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that's a different conclusion.
Okay, but it comes to the same conclusion. It's just a different way of learning it. Okay. So the question is now, well, the man de nachkele mehavartim, fine, according to Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, who's learning the proper order from the word mehavartim, hi she'erim, hi avidle, what's he doing with she'erim? What does he explain? Who is she'erim then? The answer is Mibori Lilachitani. That's what we're going to have to deal with, what he does with Havartim. Wait. Yeah. He needs it for what we learn in a Braisa as follows. She'erei zu ishtei, when we say that she'erei means his wife. And where do we see that she'erei can mean his wife? Because you have, the Pasuk says, she'erei ksusavai nasa la yigra, that a husband has to make sure not to diminish his wife's she'erei ksusavai nasa, her food, her clothes, and her conjugal rights.
And that's a wife,
and also it says v'ha'yu l'basar echad. One of the basic meaning of she'er is flesh. A husband and wife are one flesh. V'ha'yu l'basar echad. There's a couple of different other little dim that we're showing him talk about how exactly we know she'er can mean the wife or whatever. In this week's parasha also, when the pasuk says team she'er akar eveilov. Yesterday we were talking about the idea that she'er over there means the father, because the next thing the pasuk says is imor l'aviv. But now we'll say, but the halacha is actually that she'era in connection with Koyan becoming tamei means his wife. Him la she'era akaravela, we can become tamei mes for his wife, as well as the other six relatives that I mentioned over there. Okay. So she'era zuishte. Malama cha bao yerush.
The parents, children, and sister.
Unmarried sister, yeah. So, brother, right. From this we learn that a husband yarshins from his wife. Now, the Pasuk actually phrases it. The Pasuk actually says, that you should give his nachla to his she'er. which sounds like it means, in other words, if you say she'erei the wife, it means that the wife inherits the husband.
Right.
But it's not like that. We learned in the Mishnah, a wife does not inherit from her husband, the husband inherits from his wife. We're going to deal later on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, we're going to deal with how exactly we learn from the Pasuk. We're going to have Abaye and Rava have two different ways of dashing how the Pasuk teaches us that it's the other way around, the husband inherits from his she'erei, from his wife, not the other way around. Right now, that's not relevant, but the point is, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi would say, she'erei doesn't mean the father, like the first time I said, it means his wife.
Okay.
So therefore, so the father is taka not listed, but how do you know where the father is? Because of Habakkuk. Okay. Ulaman the Nasalim She'erai Hai Babautim my obviously. What about according to the first Tana who learned from She'erai? What did he do with the Habakkuk? The answer is Megoyle the Chidatanya. He uses it for what it says in a Braisa, what I was mentioning before. Rebbe Yehuda, Bekulam Nem Behen Nesina, by all the other relatives, when you give it to the brothers, to their uncles, whatever, to the son, it uses the word Nesina. Bekan Nem Behen Havara. Here instead it uses the word Havartim. You should pass it over. She'ein L'chosha Mavir Nachla, Meshevet L'shevet, Elapas, because the only one who can cause Nachla to pass from one Shevet, to pass over from one Shevet to another, is only a daughter, Ubno Baila Yoshinaisa, because her son or her husband will Yoshin her. Her husband is likely to be from a different Shevet, her son also, because he follows his father. So therefore, the only way that Nachla can end up going from one Shevet to another is if there's a daughter involved who Yoshins. So that's why it uses the word. That's why it uses the word v'habartim, but not to teach us anything about the order, according to that time.
Okay. So how does he learn about the order?
That was the limud that we said before. That he learns from she'erei. He says the psukim are out of order. She'erei has to be put in before. She'erei has to be slotted in before achiv and achay aviv, on the basis that we said before. Akarev kodim. The closer one comes first. Okay. Fine. So those are the two limudim. Okay, so now we have a general question. According to the first Tana, we might she'erei zehav. How do you know the word she'erei means the father? Dichtiv she'erei v'chay. Fine, because you have the pasuk we were mentioning yesterday that the pasuk says by the arayis don't marry your aunt because she'erei v'chay. She's your father's relative. So we see she'erei is associated with the father. Well, in that case, ema she'erei zehav. By that logic, you could also say she'erei means the mother. Dichtiv she'erei v'chay, because the pasuk also says you're not allowed to marry your mother's sister for the same reason, because she'erei v'chay. Amar Rava, so Rava says, true, the word she'er in and of itself could mean either parent. She'er, she'erai, same thing. No, that's not a difference. She'erai just means his share. So fine, the word she'er in principle could mean either parent, but Amar Krava, the pasuk continues, it's not just any she'erai, it's the she'erai who is mimishpachto, who is from his family, the Yarash Oysa, and he inherits it.
How do we know it's
family? And how do we know what his family? Mishpachas of Kruya Mishpacha, Mishpachas em ena Kruya Mishpacha. Only the father's family is called Mishpacha. Only the relatives on the father's side can be called mishpacha. Mishpachas amen, it could be mishpacha. If you only have a relationship with somebody on the mother's side, it's not called mishpacha. Like we said in the Mishnah, for example, brothers who have the same mother and not the same father don't yarshin from each other. So therefore, if the pasuk says that the she'erai have to be mishpachtoi, that can only be the father, because the mother would be from a different mishpacha. So the question is, what do you mean? Because the pasuk says, when the Yidden were counted, they were counted according to mishpachosim, according to their families, levesavosim, according to their father's houses. So we see it's strictly the father's line is considered the mishpacha. Now comes the interesting agat part.
If that's where we learn it from.
Yeah. So if it weren't for that, we would have thought that the mishpacha means both. But yeah. Okay. So the question is, so you're telling me then that the mother's family is not called mishpacha for this purpose? But you have a pasuk like this. So for background, okay, we're now going to be talking about from here until towards the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. Hopefully, we'll get through all of it today. We're going to be talking about the story of Pesel Micha and the guy who served it as a kohen. The story in brief, and then it's in Sefer Shoftim. At some point during the period of the Shoftim, there's different opinions exactly when, there's this guy named Micha who makes a statue. This is the famous Micha who was in the wall over there, and Moshe Rabbeinu was complaining to the Eidosh, wow, "You're tough and you're so cruel, you're allowing the Mitzrayim to be so cruel to the Yidden, they're taking babies and putting them in the walls." So the Eidosh tells him, "You can take one out, but you're going to see he's going to become a Rasha, I have my reasons for that." So he takes out this one, Micha, and he's the one who was involved in making the eagle. So now he makes a statue. Different Mephoshim discusses it. Did he actually mean it for Avodah Zarah? Did he mean it maybe as a method of worshiping Hashem? Either way, it's also, but it's a difference. Is it an Isser Skila or is it an Isser Lav? Anyway, whatever. The bottom line is he has a statue. Well, he has a statue and he needs a priest for it. So here's where we come in. The pasuk says, "Vayinar mibeis lechem Yehuda." There was a young man from Beis Lechem in Yehuda, mimishpachas Yehuda, from the mishpacha of Yehuda, vuhu Levi, and he was a Levi vuhu Gershom, and he was living over there. And the pasuk continues how he came to Micha. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that Micha was a great machnas orach. So he comes to Micha, and Micha offers him a job as a priest for this getchke. But the point is the pasuk says that he's mimishpachas Yehuda vuhu Levi. So for Gufakasha, you have a contradiction. Amitru Levi, Amami Levi. You say that he's a Levi, meaning that he comes from Shevet Levi. But then it says Mimishbachas Yehuda, Amami Yehuda, which means he comes from Shevet Yehuda.
That's Sarah. It could be the name of the...
Ah, that's what the Gemara is going to answer, that maybe his name is Levi. Wait. Yeah. Okay. Ella Lav Davu Ami Levi Vimimi Yehuda. Bechura wouldn't have been. His father must be from Shevet Levi. His mother must be from Shevet Yehuda. Vikam Ami Mishbachas Yehuda. And the father calls him from the family of Yehuda. So we see that Mishpacha of the mother can be called Mishpacha. Mind you, Rashi on the Pasuk actually says the other way around. Rashi says that his father was from Shevet Yehuda, and his mother maybe was from Shevet Levi, which is the opposite of the Gemara over here, but whatever. Okay. Amar Rava Bar Avchanan, why? No, not necessarily, that's what it means. It could be Gavra the Shmei Levi. He happened to be, he was a person whose name happened to be Levi. So Vahu Levi, he was Levi, that was his name. Vahu, but he's from Mishpacha of Yehuda, he's from Shevet Yehuda. Okay. The question is, if you're going to say that if he wasn't actually a Levi, he's just named Levi, then what is it Micha says afterwards, after he hires this guy as his priest? He says, "After Yadaiti Kiyetiv Hashem Li, now I know that Hashem will do good for me, because the Levi is now serving for me as a Kohen." It was the family of Levi, who are supposed to be Meshurim in the Mishkan and the Bes Mikdash and whatever, I have
meaning
this person,
this guy,
meaning this guy,
to him,
is now his priest. So he's congratulating himself, but look, Bashkocha this, I found myself a Levi to serve as my kohen. Meaning on the fit? No, meaning he is. No, Micha's not from Levi. Micha's from Shevet Ephraim. But the point is, obviously, this guy is a Levi, evidently.
Right.
Not just that his name is Levi. He's actually from Shevet Levi. The answer is Ain. It's Shmuel Gaber, the Shmuel Levi. No, maybe what Micha means is I'm very happy. I found a guy whose name is Levi. Shmogorim, the name is a significant thing. Also, the Ritva says what it is like this. When people hear his name is Levi, they're going to think he must be from Shevet Levi. And that'll attract more people.
Branding.
It's all the brand. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So you could still say that his name was Levi, but he was from Shevet Yehuda. Yeah. Okay. Problem with that is he Levi Shmoy. But okay, was his name actually Levi? Bahala Yehonasan Shmoy. But we know from later on in the Sukkim that his name was Yehonasan. Because that's different. Why is it
Levi?
No, the Chassam Sofer points out in one of his Trovas in a different connection that you never find in Tanakh and Mishnayos and Gemara, you never find until late in the time of the Rishonim or early in the time of the Achronim that a person has two names. A person has one name.
Wow.
He says that there's a famous thing that brought that's how the name Schneier got invented. You had a family where they had a boy. One side wanted to name him Meir after their father. The other side wanted to name him Yair after their father. So they compromised and came up with the name Schneier. They didn't just call him Mayor Yor because there's no such thing as having two names. Yeah. So how do we? Okay. So what happens? So the pasuk goes on to tell that you had after Micha has it. So Micha has a statue. He has this guy. He has this guy as a priest for it. One day, a couple of people from Shevet Dun show up. They're having a problem. Their land is not their land. Their portion in Eretz Yisrael, which is the area nowadays near Tel Aviv, is not enough for them. A lot of it is occupied by the Plishtim and the Amorim and whatnot. So they're on the lookout for new land. They send out some scouts. They send out some scouts, and these scouts come and stay by Micha's house, and they meet up with this kohen, with this priest over there, and eventually, when the whole Shevet Levi comes through to capture the land, they found the land in the north of Eretz Yisrael, the area near Banyas nowadays, which is called Dun in those times, and they come. It's in the north of Eretz Yisrael, north of the Kinneret. So they're on their way to conquer it. They pass by over there and they take the statue and all the paraphernalia and they convince this priest to go along with them. They tell him, you know what, you're better off. Aren't you better off being a priest for a whole Shevet, for the whole Shevet done, rather than to just be for one family? And the pasuk says, the Yehonah son ben Gershom ben Menashe, who one of Hayukainim l'Shevet Adani. It says, Yehonah son, the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe, he and his children were priests for Shevet done. So you see that his name was Yehonasan. So what kind of Levi? Okay, Amalei. So he answers him. V'litai meich. Okay, according to your own logic, you're asking from that pasuk. You have to anyway figure out there's something wrong with that pasuk anyway. V'chi ben Menashe hu? Was this person actually a son or a descendant of Menashe? V'halei ben Moshe hu? He's actually a descendant of Moshe Rabbeinu.
Why should he be from Menashe?
Because the pasuk says, "Yehonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe." But as a matter of fact, he wasn't descended from Menashe. He's actually descended from Moshe. And we know that, because the pasuk lists in Divrei Yomim that Moshe had two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. Here we say Yehonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. That's the same Gershom. In fact, Marashah points out, that's why, the Torah itself tells us that Moshe had two children called Gershom and Eliezer at the beginning of Parashat Yisroel. Why did the Gemara bring that pasuk? The reason is because later on, at the end, the Gemara is going to bring another pasuk from Divrei Yomim that mentions the son of Gershom called Shavuel. We'll see later why he changed his name. But anyway, so we see, therefore, it's the same one. So it's the same one. So he's a descendant of Moshe.
Gershom,
not Gershom, the son of Levi. Gershom. Gershom had one son. The pasuk only lists one son of his in Divrei Yomim. B'nei Gershom Shvuel Harosh.
And he was Yonatan.
He's Yonatan. The Gemara is going to say later that he changed his name to Shvuel. So now we're saying he's from Shevet Levi. Yeah. He's from Shevet Levi, the grandson of Moshe, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So after all, you have to realize there's something the matter in that pasuk anyway. There's something more than meets the eye.
Was still considered to be of one Shevet.
Of course, he was from Shevet Levi, the son of Amram, the son of Kaz, who's the son of Levi. Yeah. By the way, Marsha points out that's why also when we said a few lines ago that Micha is very happy he has this guy as a Kohen, Moshe Rabbeinu himself was a Kohen for a period of time in the Mishkan after all, so therefore he's especially happy to have a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu being a Kohen for me. We'll get to that. Relax.
He's worshiping Avodah Zarah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get to that also. Let's continue going. Anyway. Okay. So anyway, as it is, there's more than meets the eye in that topic. Right. He's not a son of Menashe, he's a son of Moshe. El, when mitoch sha'asa ma'isa Menashe, so what do you have to say? Because he acted like Menashe Melech Yehuda, that is, who worships Avodah Zarah, tloy akasa b'Menashe, therefore the pasuk attributes him to Menashe. It's in the future, but still. And Marshall points out there's a similarity between them also. We're going to say later on, at the end of the sugya, that Yehonasan ended up doing tshuva, so did Menashe. So therefore, but
this is Gilgul.
There's a certain similarity of it. And as a matter of fact, actually, if you look in the pasuk, if you look in a printed Nach, you'll find the letter Nun of the word Menashe over there is higher on the line. It's not even with the other letters on the line. It's tluya. It's raised up because that shows us really the word is supposed to be Moshe, and the Nun is stuck in there. It actually says on the pasuk because of the covet of Moshe Rabbeinu, because the pasuk didn't want to say explicitly that this guy who worships the Avodah Zarah is a descendant of Moshe. Yeah. Okay. Hachanami, so by the same logic also, you're asking why is he described as from Mishpachas Yehuda, even though he's from Shevet Levi. Mitechsha also, Maisa Menashe, the Osi Yehuda, since he acted like Menashe, and Menashe came from Shevet Yehuda, Shloya Kasa Yehuda, so therefore the positive attributes him to Yehuda. So the Maharal talks about like this. He says, Levi and Yehuda are the two leading Shvatim of the Jewish people.
Right.
Both of them have a certain lack of, a certain opposition to Avodah Zarah.
Right.
Levi, we know about the Chetah Egel, for example. Right. Yehuda, there's the famous thing that the Gemara says in the Gila that anybody who's kofer b'Avodah Zarah is called a Yehudi. That's why Mordechai is called a Yehudi. The difference.
Meloshen Yehuda.
Meloshen Yehuda. Yeah, it means from Yehuda. Right. So on the other hand, none of Shevet Levi, at least at the time of the Egel, worshipped Avodah Zarah, whereas there were people from Shevet Yehuda who did. By the ego and later time, therefore, the pasuk has to attribute him to somebody who was saying he doesn't even he is biologically from Shevet Levi and Lahalacha is a Levi, but he didn't act like his Shevet. He acted more. If you want to attribute him to a leading Shevet of the Jewish people, he's more like Yehuda, who some of them did fall down on it. That's what he said. Okay. So therefore, in other words, you have no proof from the pasuk that his mother or anybody in his family was from Shevet Yehuda. So therefore, that's it. So mishpacha strictly means the father of mishpacha. Okay. Going on, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yichai, Mikan Shatolin Asakokolov Makokol. From this, you see that you attribute that you attribute the corruption, the misdeed to the one who already is known to do bad. In other words, because here we're saying that we attribute this guy, we talk about this guy who worships Avodah Zarah as if he's related to Menashe and to Yehuda.
Menashe is the
Makokal, and we're told that it's our Kolobai. Rabbi Yosef b'Chanina Amar Malchah. Rabbi Yosef b'Chanina says we can learn it from a different source. The pasuk says at the beginning of Malachim about Adon Yahu, who tried to usurp the throne for himself over Shlomo. He says the pasuk says he was very good looking. And she gave birth to him after Avshalom. What do you mean? Right? He's not. They don't have the same mother. Adon Yahu is Ben Chagis, Avshalom is Ben Macha. They're from different wives of David HaMelech. So what do you mean she gave birth to him after Avshalom? What it means is because he acted like Avshalom and rebelled against the kingdom, because he tried to make himself king, over, he knew that David wanted Shlomo king. So therefore, therefore the Pasuk attributes him to Avshalom, and Marsha says, in other words, what the Pasuk is saying is, his mother raised him the same way as Avshalom's mother raised him, as a spoiled child who figured he can get whatever he wants. Hachinami, so the same thing over here. The same thing over here by Yonasan. Because he acted like Menashe, Tloya Kosovo Menashe, therefore the Pasuk attributes him to Menashe.
She also raised Menashe.
No. We don't know how Menashe's mother raised him, but that's a different thing. But Menashe was worshipped of Adazara, and so did this Yonasan. Menashe eventually did Tshuva, so did Yonasan. Okay. More on this topic. How Bechlal, how taka does it come that Moshe Rabbeinu should have a grandson of worship of Adazara? Amar Rav Elazar, La'olam yidbak adam b'tovim. A person should always be careful to connect himself to good people, to marry into a family of good people. Sharing Moshe Shinasa Bas Yisroel, because after all, you see, Moshe married a daughter of Yisroel, Yotzim Mena Yohanasan, and Yohanasan was his descendant. Because Forot, okay, Yisroel did Shuvah, all very nice and good, but Forot, he was originally a priest of Avodah Zarah. And therefore,
but she was born, his wife was born after
Forot was born before anybody converted, On the other hand, Aaron Shanasa Bas Aminadov, Yotzim Mena Pinchas. On the other hand, Aaron married the daughter of Aminadov, and who is his descendant, who is his grandson, Pinchas. Okay, the question is...
Well, then you can say the other way around.
What?
You can say the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu was worshipping Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, that's what we're saying, because Moshe married a daughter of Yisra, and therefore it had an effect on his descendants. Okay, I mean, there is obviously a lot more to it than that. First of all, the Gemara itself is going to talk about a little bit, but besides that, I'll tell you, there is an interesting thing that Sefer Chassidim says that... You know, the Gemara mentions, for example, the famous thing that if you have a family with Torah is by them for three generations, then it'll never cease from them. We don't in Bamatia. So how comes it, Taka? We find, unfortunately, you find families that had Torah for generations and then it went away.
Sure,
because they weren't careful about this.
About marrying
somebody from an unsuitable family.
So wow. You're saying if you're in Torah and you marry someone who's been in Torah also for generations, nothing like that would happen, but we know it did happen.
That we're going to say later that Roy Bonim Jomim La'asiyah Ein, that you always, first of all, there is always Bechira, that's true, but also, we're going to say later in the Gemara, most children tend to resemble the mother's brothers, so if you have a mother's brother who's corrupt or off the derech or whatever, then that's a, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, a Pinchas Lav Megidda?
What about Balichu then?
Okay, Balichu, I mean, sometimes you have.
It
doesn't always, but again, a person has the Bechira, they can still overcome it. We're saying a person has a predisposition to it. But besides that, I mean, again, nowadays, you have the most people who are Balichu, before that they were Tinokas Shadishpu. You can't, you know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about somebody who was raised the right way in the right environment or whatever, and then, you know, we're not seeing.
The
Klolin
don't always work.
Yeah, Klolin, I would call out exceptions. Yeah. Okay. Question is, Pinchas lav mi Yisrael? Telling me that Pinchas didn't descend from Yisrael? Baksiv velos of an Aaron lokach lemi bnois kutiel lo leisha. And who is kutiel? My lav de osi mi Yisrael. Doesn't that mean that Pinchas is descended from Yisrael? Shepite magolim lav kutiel lo Yisrael. Yeah, before Shemar the prophet say, but kutiel has to be somebody else. It can't just mean that his name was kutiel, because he's not mentioned anywhere else in Tanakh.
Right.
So there'll be no reason to mention him.
So
Shepite magolim lav adizara, who fattened up calves to avadizara, and therefore he's called kutiel. So therefore, you see, Pinchas is also descended from Yisrael. The answer is no. The Asi mi Yosef. No, what it means is Pinchas is descended from Yosef. Shepit beit bi Yisrael, who fought against the Yetzirah. So Putiel, that's who Putiel is. It's another name for Yosef. Okay. Question is then, v'haloi shvatim mevazim. So don't we know?
Are we saying that?
So we don't have any reason to say yet that Pinchas is descended from Yisrael. His grandmother
was there, not Putiel then?
Now, we know that, okay, eventually we're going to say that Putiel, that means he was descended from both, actually, but we haven't gotten to that yet. We're still discussing it. Yes, we know in the end, we know that Yisrael had seven names and one of them was Putiel, but that we learn only from this pasuk, only after we finish the discussion over here. This Gemara, by the way, is also in Sota, which means that those of us who are learning it for Sfira are going to be coming to it another couple of weeks. Okay. So the question is, but we know that Pinchas was descended. We know beferish that Pinchas was descended from Yisrael. V'alo shvatim v'vazim, because we know the shvatim were making fun of Pinchas after he killed Zimri. But Omrim, and they're saying, Isim ben Puti, yeah, what do you look at this, ben Puti, ben Shepitim, Avi Ema, Golem, Lava, that his grandfather fattened up calves for Avodah Zorah, Yarig Nasi Shevet Yisrael. He should be killing a Nasi of a Shevet from the Jewish people. There's a sikha, by the way, in Chelet Seth, where the Rebbe explains why after they mentioned he fattened up calves for Avodah Zorah, just mention that he worships Avodah Zorah. Because they're showing what a cool person he was. He's fattening them up for the purpose of killing them. So therefore, they're arguing Pinchas is not doing it, besides that the Avish is covered. He's doing it because he's a cool person. So therefore, the prophet comes and tells us that, no, he's descended from Aaron HaKohen, or Yav Shalom, or Yav Shalom. That's the real reason he did it. Anyway, so we see that everybody knew that, he's descended from Yisrael. Ella, no, you have to answer like this. E avur de'imei mi Yosef, imei de'imei mi Yisrael. No, it means like this. It's not that Elazar married a daughter of Yisrael. Elazar married a descendant of Yisrael. So either the word putil has a double meaning. It means Yosef, and it also means Yisrael, because both pitim agolim, but also shapit bit Yisrael. So it's one or the other. Either Pinchas's father's mother, either Pinchas's mother's father was descended from Yosef, and ime de ime mi Yisrael, and his mother's mother is descended from Yisrael. In which case, he's at least one generation further removed from Yisrael than Yehonasan is. Iavur de ime mi Yisrael, ime de ime mi Yosef, or his mother's father is descended from Yisrael, and his mother's mother is descended from Yosef. In other words, he comes from both. But the Rashbam explains that what it means is, in other words, that even though we're mentioning grandparents, what we may mean is it's, in other words, it's several generations removed. Pinchas may have been four or five generations removed from Yisrael. Yonatan is only his grandmother is Tzipora, his father is Gershon. So he's Moshe married Tzipora, and Yonatan is their grandson. Whereas Pinchas might be four or five generations removed from Yisrael. So that's not such an issue. The kind of thing we're talking about only goes down one or two generations. Tosfos has a different explanation. That what it means is, with Yonatan, the problem was that the taint of Yichus was from his father's side. With Pinchas, it may have been from the mother's side. That's not as bad.
From
Yonatan is on his father's side, because his father, Gershom, is the son of Sephardo. Mm. But whereas with Pinchas, it may be that even if he is the same, even if we don't say like Rashbam, that it means literally his grandfather is Yisrael or whatever, but fine, that's his mother's father. That's not as bad.
Why?
Tosfos doesn't elaborate. Why not? What?
That brings again the question of Mishpacha.
No, but no, because we didn't use the word mishpacha, but they just said mibnois putil.
Well, why it's not as bad?
Joseph doesn't elaborate. Why not? But I don't know. Maybe just because
the father gives
the chinuch.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know. Joseph doesn't elaborate what exactly the difference would be. Marsha says a whole different thing on it. Marsha says basically that if you have like Aaron, where he married the daughter of Aminadav and the sister of Nachshon, as the Gemara is going to say soon, then fine, that can overcome that. Even if you have a Yisroel somewhere there in the family tree, it's not so bad. The big chosim like that can overcome it. Whereas over here, fine. What he says is like this: with Aaron, you have like this. Aaron himself married the daughter of Aminadav, sister of Nachshon. Elazar married Bnos Putiel, and we're saying even Putiel himself, it means that his wife is also descended from Yosef. Mm-hmm. So that's not so bad. Mashenkin with Moshe, fine. But Mashenkin with Moshe, he married Zipporah, who's the daughter of Yisrael, and we don't know who Gershom married, but it wasn't necessarily anybody with any particular family chosim. Therefore, there wasn't anything to overcome the influence of Yisrael in the family. So that's what Marashah says. That's the difference over here. Okay.
Hashem included the dealing with Gerim, then
fine.
You shouldn't marry a Ger.
No, of course, no. We're not saying you shouldn't marry a Ger, but you need to be careful. You need to be aware.
You need to be aware that things are more chumishdik than nowadays dick. Because the chumish says, why was Avram tefillah not? Well, why was Yitzchak tefillah and Rivka tefillah tzaddik ben tzaddik?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there are. I mean, it is more complicated than that. I mean, the fact of the matter is that
I don't know why the mother is more likely to give a son to the worshiping of Avodah Zarah, a grandson, than the father.
I don't know, but I will tell you also, actually,
then you see Ruth.
Okay, every rule has exceptions, but I'll tell you also, there is interesting, the Balaturim over here says something else. He says there was another factor involved over here, which the Gemara is not mentioning.
What?
When Moshe wanted to marry Tzipora, the Baal HaTurim says, Yisro made him promise that the first child they have is going to be dedicated to Avodah Zarah. So Moshe agreed to it because he figured, you know, at least this way I'll be part of the family. I can eventually influence Yisro for the good. But nevertheless, and the Baal HaTurim says later on, we find later on in Parashas Shmos, Moshe is traveling to Mitzrayim with his family. Amalek almost kills him because he hadn't made a bris for his son. Which son? So Rashi says that he didn't make a bris because he has to go on the trip in a hurry and it's going to be dangerous. But the according to the Baal HaTurim, the reason is because this is the son, Gershom, who he had promised Yisro is going to be dedicated to Avodah Zarah. Therefore, no bris until Tzipora took matters into her hands and made the bris. But therefore, the Baal HaTurim says that's why it had an effect.
So you see that the mother...
So we see the mother...
The mother who's the senator of Avodah Zarah.
That is true.
She saved him and...
That is true.
Him.
On the other hand, how does it come that a Moshe Rabbeinu comes in such a situation where the only way he can get married is to make such a promise is because, as one of the Mepharshim says, explaining the Enyak and explaining what the Baal HaTurim is saying because of the factor we're saying over here. The fact is Moshe should have been a little more careful about who
sure.
he married.
But this was before Matan Torah.
It's before Matan Torah, but even so. And actually, I mean, there, the Ben Yoyada points out there are other factors as well. I mean, he's a Midian. There are no other Jews around. Nevertheless, the Gemara is still saying, well, Olam, nevertheless, even with all those factors, a person still needs to be aware and a person still needs to be careful. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, Dekanami, fine. We can also prove that the word putil has a double meaning. It means Yosef and it also means Yisro.
Right?
Just even notes putil because it says from the daughter is a putil, tauti, which implies two. Either it implies two because it uses the word mibnois from the daughters, plural, or because putiel itself, the Rashbam says, because if it meant just one of them, it would say putel, the yud makes it a plural. The Ritva says another thing, putiel can be understood, ale like ale, these putis, meaning that there's two of them. Okay, Shmami enough, that proves it, that in fact, yes, Pinchas is descended from Yisrael, but he's also descended from Yosef. And there again, like the Marshal says, so that's enough to overcome that between that and the source of Aaron's own wife and her family, that was enough to overcome the
Aaron was the descendant of
Aaron is a Levi, he's a descendant of Levi, his brother of Moshe. But we're talking about Aaron's wife was from Shevet, that was from Shevet Yehuda. She's the daughter of Nachshon. She's the sister of Nachshon Min Aminadav. And Elazar's wife we're saying is with no Putiel. Yes, she's partly descended from Yisro, but she's also partly descended from Yosef. Okay. Omar Rabba, Hanoisa Isha Tzorach Sheyivdek Ba'acher. When a person marries a woman, he has to check her brothers, see what her brothers are like, and then the children will that'll give you an idea what the children are like. The Chidas says on this, by the way, when you say every Friday night, Eshes Chayil Mi Yimsa, the initials of those four words are Achim, which hints at this.
Oh.
How you can find an Eshes Chayil? Look at the brothers. Yeah. Yeah. The Chidas says this. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vayikach Aaron et Elisheva bat Aminadav achos Nachshon." The pasuk says, "Aaron married Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon." So you have to ask, why does it have to tell us she's the sister of Nachshon? Mimashma Shenema bat Aminadav any yedeach achos Nachshon he. If we know she's the daughter of Aminadav, automatically we know she's the sister of Nachshon because we know Nachshon is the son of Aminadav. Ma tamad loy machos Nachshon mikanshan no yisaisha tzarach sheyivdek ba'achel. So you have to check her brothers because Tana we learn in a brayta roif bonim joimin la'achei ha'ei. Most children resemble their uncles, their mother's brothers. Why dafka that? So the Maharal talks about an idea. He says that a sister and brother are the closest relationship there could possibly be. So therefore, the children of the sister tend to resemble her brother. What is that?
If there's no brother.
Yeah, then
she
what?
She doesn't have a brother.
If one of the brother says, the doctor's trying to figure, Okay.
I'm not getting
it. If you married somebody,
yeah.
she doesn't have any brothers,
yeah.
But then,
it's about the Shem's figure
for yourself.
Oh, I see, okay.
Because
he's not. Okay, fine. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now we get the whole.
I see. Okay. All right. Okay.
So you choose a wife by her brothers.
So you choose them? Yeah. So that's why the pasuk is mentioning that she's the sister of Nachshon.
And I kind of remember the son of Yavamas.
It could be we had a Yavamas also. I don't remember. I'll tell you also. There's one of the Mepharshim says a vort on this. He says we know that Nachshon was a Zoriz. He's the first one to jump into the Yamzuk. What do we mean by really bonim doimin lachayim? As the Gemara tells us in many places in Shas, koyanim zuzim, the koyanim are very zoriz. They're very quick to act and to do what they need to. How do they get that from Avraham? What?
Yeah,
From who?
So you have the different opinions, but you have the, I think Tosafot says over there in Sota and the Sugya about that. I think that was Nachshon Grumton first, then Shevet Binyamin, and that's why Shevet Yehuda was angry at Shevet Binyamin, how our Nasi went in first. We should be the first ones to be following him and not you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but Nachshon is the first one. He's the Zoriz, and the Kohenim, Takatev, the Kohenim, the descendants of Aaron, Takatev after that. Okay. We continue to.
So the good thing is, the best thing to do.